Manik Gashaga is chief executive officer for a few more days of the Kenyatta International Convention Center. It's a state corporation in the Kenyan government under the Ministry of Tourism and Wildlife. KICC is the largest convention center in East Africa and the fourth largest in Africa. Nana is a single mother of three young boys, and on any given day, she interacts with heads of state from around the world or simply gives motivational advice that plays a strong role in uplifting youth. She's seen as one of Kenya's biggest role models because she openly talks about how she overcame her alcohol addiction and how she works every day to stay sober, normalizing the day-to-day challenges that all women face. Nana is a very special guest because she's a very special friend of mine. Oh, Nana, it's so wonderful to meet again with you and talk about your family and your work and just you. But first, let's talk about what's happening in Kenya. Now, our family is comprised of listeners all over the globe. And you know, we call our listeners family because we share so much together. Many of these family are in the United States, Europe, and Africa. And some possibly haven't been to Kenya who are not from Africa, nor even thought about visiting. As I know what an amazing country it is, you're the perfect person to inform people about its majesty and the challenges you're having right now. Talk a little bit about Kenya.
Thank you so much, Janice, and hello from Kenya. And what to say? We always say magical Kenya. Welcome to magical Kenya. And of course, Kenya is located on the east coast of Africa. And it is in proportion, if you imagine, the size of Texas. Now, that's just the geographic of it. Some fun facts about Kenya. Well, we've got super internet connectivity. We are the home of M-Pesa. That's more tech space. M-Pesa is the mobile banking platform. So again, that is in terms of, we are the birthplace of that. We are also the birthplace of mankind. We've got the cradle of mankind. And it is said that every human being came from Kenya up in the north part, Turkana, which also plays a big role, more so in the Black Panther movie and trilogies that you know, because again, Captain America flies over and actually Turkana, where they point down, is Wakanda. Anyways, more about us nowadays here in Kenya. We're known for our hospitality. When you travel the world, especially in the Middle East and also in California, a lot of the hospitality industry there are from Kenya in terms of that. The people, we are a fun, spirited people. We love to smile, we love to help, we love to connect. We are also a young generation, a young group of people. And what I mean by that is our demographic. 75% of Kenyan population is the youth, which means below 35. So I'm not just saying that. That's what I mean by us being vibrant and youthful.
That's my crew.
Exactly. And again, you know, it's a very conducive place to do business. There's a lot of startups happening here. We are known as the Silicon Valley of Africa. We're also known as the real estate of Africa. And of course, even the birthplace of the safari. So anyone who's looking at coming, they normally set sights on either Kenya, South Africa, or of course, Nigeria. But again, so we're in the top five places of settlement from people outside. The weather and the climate, right now we're going through our summer, so it's nice and warm. But again, the equator goes through us, so it's not that humidity that you would normally see or feel with that. Kenya in a nutshell, it's magical. And that's why we call it Magical Kenya. And anytime you come, the experiences are always very different. And all your experiences will be not one and the same. You can come to Kenya and start a thriving business, which has happened before in terms of when people do come here. Again, you can come to Kenya and market and visit the different markets and the tourism and the safari. And we also have the largest amount of population of birds in the world. So again, anyone who's doing bird watching, for that. And again, of course, lastly, we're the home of the long distance runners. So Karibu Kenya, which means welcome to Kenya.
Oh, it feels so great to receive your welcome. And I'm going to do that in person. I think we said we were going to do it after March, right?
Exactly.
So
and
I'm
I cannot
looking
wait.
forward. Yes, I'm looking forward to it so much. I'm looking forward to so much with you, Nana. I mean, the time that we enjoyed together in Atlanta was just amazing. Before we stop talking about Kenya specifically, though, there's a saying, Hakuna Matata.
Yes.
And made famous in The Lion King. So listen, what does that mean to Kenyans?
I mean, I guess it's, you know, in terms of we've been made very, very popular thanks to Disney and The Lion King. And of course, Hakuna Matata means no worries, you know, taking it easy, taking it in your own stride. And that's really the kind of vibe that you get here in Kenya. You know, it really is, it means no worries. You know, you come in and here, as we've been mentioned, with your vast family that you have on this platform, Kenya is exactly the same way. When you come here, no worries, we will get along. We will definitely make sure you have an amazing time. And you are family. You are family. And for Kenyans, like I said, putting us on the map the best way we can through the Disney movie has really helped us out. And film is a huge, one of our biggest exports right now in terms of that. Many, many movies have come out of Kenya, you know, out of Africa. Of course, The Lion King, they did their whole research here. We do have Pride Rock. So when you come, I will definitely take you on the Lion King tour with that, amongst other things, definitely. And yeah, we're really just happy that we're able to, each movie that we do, be it a Disney animation or a full featured film, we have won many awards for that. So, yeah.
Well, you know, Nani, you've talked with a lot of celebrities about Kenya. I mean, from Terrence Howard to Sharon Stone. Do you have any funny or favorite memories of educating these Americans or stars from anywhere about your homeland?
I think definitely, you know, because as you're saying, you know, it's fun stories because, again, when you think of Kenya, you don't really know what to think. And I get that, you know, and that's why we always say, once you live the magic, you keep coming back for more. So some fun stories, we had the music, MTV Mamas, MTV Music Awards. They do the Africa edition like they do America and Europe. So we had it in 2009. And there we had Akon coming through. We had Wyclef, we had a lot of African artists as well. And, you know, even there, the first time when, you know, when Akon was even coming, he just was like, we're communicating. He's like, yeah, I'm only going to be here for in and out. I'm not doing anything else. And then 2 weeks later, he's still in Kenya and he's like, I want to see more. He's like, I want to buy a property here. I want to do this here. So, I mean, it's been fun things like that. And also, again, even just demystifying with anybody, you know, not necessarily celebrities, like showing pictures. You know, Kenya, we also have beautiful powder white sand and crystal blue water. You know, and people normally think of that as like either the Caribbean or Fiji. So it's fun showing a picture of like Fiji and Kenya. Or a really big picture of like a not so good beach of somewhere in the world, and then have the Kenyan one there. And they always pick the worst one because they don't really associate. They associate Kenya with tea, coffee, runners, and the safari, but again with the beach. So that whole full circle, just my favorite and most memorable is when I'm able to host celebrities and VIPs, and when they come, day after day, they're just absorbing it to the time when they're leaving and they're just really emotional, just like, thank you, you know? So really putting on an amazing itinerary for you, JB, when you get out here. And, you know, I really can't wait to see how you receive that and what you think of that. But with everything, and like I said, Kenya's also really also known for business as well, you know, and in terms of that, we're really good with that, so. Yeah.
Well, I can hardly wait to get back to Africa. I've been three times and I certainly enjoyed the safari at Singita, but there are questions about safaris as well. Here's the thing that I have for you. You know, the first Black woman to win a Nobel Prize was from Kenya, Wangari Maathai, and many people do not know about her. Share a little bit about her background and any information you can give on her that helps our family to really get the spirit of Kenya. We often think of Kenya and Africa, but mainly as the dark continent, but you're dispelling so much of that. Share with us.
Thank you. And of course, yes, Wangari Maathai, she had started a movement in terms of the Green Belt movement, which was all about, obviously, you know, saving the environment. And it was through planting of trees, really starting that movement where, you know, with deforestation, when you remove one tree, you've got to be able to plant it somewhere else. And of course, it was not really well received as is anywhere in the world, you know. And of course, she was able to really turn the mindset of government. You know, she came as an outsider, and then at the end was like, you know, the belle of the ball, you know. And we are actually, you know, that thing of let's plant a tree today so our children can sit under the shade in the next generation. And you're actually going to even be able to see when you come out, and even with what you see, what she's been able to do. She started that, she created that, she put Kenya on the map in terms of, you know, the Green Belt movement and replanting trees and saving the environment, which, like you're saying, you know, for Africa, you probably wouldn't even think that. You wouldn't even be, she was very forward thinking with that. And again, you know, she received the Nobel Peace Prize when it was also with Oprah. I think Oprah was giving it, handing it out. And, you know, she was a very, obviously she's, Wangari has passed away since, you know, but she was a very humble woman. Even for winning a Nobel Peace Prize, she would, in any given day, she could sit with any head of state or with a young child out in the urban areas. You know, she was a woman of all walks of life. And I'm really happy, because normally what tends to happen is that we normally get to celebrate people, unfortunately, after they're gone. But, you know, I'm really happy we were able to give her flowers. Or in this sense, her trees, as they, when they say her trees, you know, even with the most coveted, one of the most coveted prizes of globally. So with her, she was a real forward thinker. She was a visionary, and she was really about saving the environment on a global scale and key about education of the environment. If we are to pinpoint one woman, or one person, let's even not, you know, gender basis, one person for Kenya who has taken that initiative to educate our Kenyan people, it was her, and we'll be forever grateful and thankful for that.
I think that's a gift to the world, not just to Kenya. It's from Kenya, but it's a gift to the world. And, you know, talk about her receiving the Nobel Prize. It's interesting because right before we met in Atlanta for the International Leadership Conference under Bishop T.D. Jakes and First Lady Sarita Jakes's leadership, where we enjoyed many hours of fun, you and I, just in leadership lessons, I had been a judge at the Clinton Global Initiative, where a very young Kenyan entrepreneur actually won, and she wasn't able to be there. And we had these Kenyan men standing up presenting her company that makes sanitary pads for women. So I just think Kenya is dispelling lots of ideas about Kenyan culture, Kenyan place in the environment. She was making these sanitary pads out of bananas, banana leaves, and just so much that is going on that can be teaching of the world. By the way, it's true that English is one of the official languages of Kenya. So when people visit as English speaking tourists, they can be warmly welcomed and learn comfortably in their own language, even when we want them to learn more Kenyan direct phrases, right?
That's very true. That's very, very true. And also, even with that, I need to send you some articles, JBH, because you've really been trending here in Kenya with that specific initiative. So I'm going to send those across to you just to see what's been happening here in Kenya since then. You know, has actually changed, not even changed, catapulted. You know, so them getting the Clinton Award and everything like that outside has actually changed their narrative here, and they are really getting a lot of support. And again, even with that, I think it's important, and I need to even share that with you so you can see just really the ripple effect you've had, and you, like you're saying, you don't even know about it. And thank you for that, you know. And like you said, it was, they won in their own right, but even just being able to be on that platform and that exposure, it just connects everybody together. And that was even before we even met, you know. But now,
I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful. Thank you for sharing that with me. I'm so grateful to have been a part of that. You know, I think that the tourism we're talking about and the exchange of ideas and business, and especially with ESG being at the top of everybody's conversation, really intersects so well with your career that is so multifaceted. Now, you know, I own a travel agency, Cerritos Travel, and the team there is incredible. Justin Dolan, who I mentioned to you, just returned from Africa, where he led a tour for a very happy group of people. As a matter of fact, Kathy Fryer, who heads Cerritos Travel for me, considers Africa as one of her favorite places to guide vacationists, and Kenya is at the top of her list. So you've been an executive at the Kenyatta International Convention Center for a long time, and now you're serving as the CEO. We're going to talk later about some of your newer endeavors. Can you just share with us, though, please, Nana, why of all the things you could have done with your life, you found this particular role to be your calling at that stage in your life?
Thank you for that. And I think also even just, you know, hospitality, like I said, that's and marketing has been my thing. You know, as a young child, I would always love the ads on TV more than the actual TV shows, you know. So being able to market my country is patriotism. You know, I mean, everybody has a love for their country on whatever scale it is. And just being able to connect and being able to be given spaces and opportunities to market Kenya. So it kind of morphed into that to be able to be 7 years ago. I was the advisor to the Minister of Tourism. And at that point in time, Kenyatta International Convention Center was going through a transition where, and that's all to do with business events. So you've got the regular tourism, and now they really needed a shift in paradigm in order to market business events. So I was sent back over as CEO, and 7 years goes by in a blink of an eye, you know, and like I was saying, I'm coming up to the end of it in a month. I've done my two terms, and as government official, you can only do two terms of 3 years in an organization. I did half a year of acting, hence the 7 years. But why that? With everything that I've fallen in position with. So for instance, doing business events meant that I could do concerts. So as soon as I got there, we were able to do Kool & the Gang. You know, imagine that in Kenya, we were able to do that. And it was really, really amazing. And with that, and then we had WizKid coming through after that. We've had Pata Ranking. We've had so SWV and
you
Black
were a DJ. Is it true you were a DJ?
I was, exactly. And that's now my love. Music, exactly. So in high school and also in university, I would do some gigs, you know, that would also, you know, be able to help me in terms of university, just getting to, but even more so my love of music. So and again, going back fullfold, you know, I was in a position then as well as the CEO of KICC. You know, a lot of people at the beginning did not even know I had been in government prior to that, you know, even in the hospitality industry for 13 years then, or even longer. You know, I've been CEO of KICC for 7 years now. I've been working for government. I've served three presidents. Now we're on our third president. Obviously, the transition has just happened now. And 25 to 26 years in the hospitality industry. So coming back now as KICC 7 years ago and taking on that role, it fit perfectly because I had a feel of all the other different parts of the hospitality, and this marketing and business events really was key for me. And again, when I first got there, of course, you know, it was the usual, did I get it because my uncle was president of the country? Or, and very soon, within like 6 months of that, people were actually even like, actually, you're even, where have you even been? You know, you've been hiding.
Nana, in less than 6 months, people are going to know where you've been. You've got some exciting stuff coming up.
Thank you.
I know you, look, I know you, like, can't talk about it. You're in embargo right now. But yeah. Tell us what you can so we know what to look forward to.
Of course. And it's an amazing opportunity, you know, following through. Like I said, I'm finishing up at KICC and really thankful for that and really appreciative of that. And now going into other avenues, and it's going to be TV, you know, and it's a platform, a huge platform, international platform in terms of that, a franchise. But again, the core thing about that was so that we'd also be able to still market Kenya, but stay true to the show's format. You know, it's not going to be it's not a travel show, so to speak, or anything like that, but having Kenya as an amazing backdrop, it doesn't get any better than that. So I'm really excited about that. And I'm sure the family will be able to be seeing me very, very soon out there. It'll be launching in March. But again, even from that, you know, I've even been approached for other things as well. So in terms of going back to now, as we're even saying, you know, the largest media house has now actually taken me on board. This is something I can talk about. The other and everything like that. But I'm also going to be a TV host for the largest. I've got my own TV show, The Nana G Show. And the whole concept of that is Saturday mornings. And it's for 3 hours and it's playing the, you know, old school hip hop and R&B. It's Spice FM with Standard Media Group, which is the largest media group in East Africa. And the whole purpose of the show, again, everything I do has to have some purpose and some meaning. And I think that's why we really connected. You know, our first meeting in Atlanta was meant to be an hour, and like 6 hours later, we're there with blankets and like continue talking. And it just was a really good fit because we it's that same ethos. So even with this show, it's about promoting local brands, pushing the local brand. There'll be a section in there that will also have Kenyan music and also Build Kenya by Kenya, which is products. And we've got so many artifacts. I mean, you saw some of the clutches that, remember, I gifted everybody, and there's a lot more. And like I was even saying, when you come out, and I know you, even when you saw what we were able to even come with to Atlanta, you were like, wow. So it's just that platform. Everything has to have some kind of meaning. It's not a monetary meaning, it's more of a country branding, marketing, and pushing everybody. It's that piece that we keep talking about.
Well, you know, Kenya has a demographic that is over 70% under 35 years of age, and the world too is getting younger. And so I just believe that Kenya is at the birth of a real regeneration of interest, and it'll be a kinder, more thoughtful interest, and Kenya will prosper from it. You talked about us being in Atlanta, and yeah, we were. I think we were in there for more like 6 or 7 hours and just really having our own, and that wasn't even on stage. That was just us. And I'm referencing when we were at Woman Thou Art Loosed in Atlanta, that conference.
Exactly.
It was masterful. Bishop Titi and First Lady Sarita Jakes, Nana, are building a powerful consciousness around personal and community responsibility. And they're not just singing to the choir on what we need to do. They're teaching how we need to do it. Quite often I find that when I speak or teach to an open public, I'm learning a lot more myself than I'm actually teaching. And you remember learning stuff from that conference that you can share as well. And I think now is a really good time to do that. I mean, yeah, share a little bit about what you learned.
First and foremost, it was just, you know, and I remember when you said something that was really powerful before, and it was, I wouldn't say scared me, but it actually put everything into perspective. You know, exactly like what you said. Bishop T.D. Jakes and First Lady Sarita are definitely on a movement. I wouldn't even call it a movement, on a educational awareness. And it's not only in the ministry now, it's also, as you're saying, you know, breaking out into the different, like with the foundation and everything like that. And when we were meeting, and there was one thing that you said, you mentioned, and you said, you know, Nana, I was very nervous, and I was like, you know, I can't believe I've been picked. I can't believe I'm here, you know why? And you were like, Nana, Bishop, you could be friends with Bishop and First Lady for 30 years, 60 years, 5 days, and you still won't, they will still not put you on that platform. They have to be able to see everybody who comes onto that platform is there in their own right. And it's not that they have, they're paying something back or they're being owed something. And when you said that to me, it made me just be like, wow, you know, own it. And that's when that was kind of part of my talk. When I was like, to my mom, I kept saying, own it. And things that I learned there was the power of sisterhood, number one, the power of friendship, Now, when I say sisterhood, obviously Women Now Aren't Loose is a whole movement for women, but of course there were many men in that audience as well. But so when I mean sisterhood, just all walks of life coming together for a couple of days and being enlightened in a way that you go back and you just, even now, I'm unpacking what I learned there. Every day I'm still unpacking, and it changed my mindset, the way I see things. And I thought already I was somewhat clear and transparent, but this was just something, a real eye-opener on how I see things. And everything that I go back now is, I really think consciously, is this going to really be beneficial? Not to me, but how many other people? The ripple effect. It's really thinking of the ripple effect.
Let me tell you what I saw happen for you. And you monument this moment, okay? Mm-hmm. I saw you move into your womanhood at that conference. You were already in your adulthood, and you knew who you wanted to be as a woman. You accepted your womanhood at that conference, and you shared that. And I want us to shift gears a little bit. It stays on the topic of your role modeling and teaching, but let's shift gears a little bit, because you're a single mom, and that's a lot already, especially with a high profile that you have. On top of that, Nana, you've been open about your alcoholism. And yes. I think you're over 23 years now sober.
Yes,
you're
correct.
About to TV. You're going to have a lot thrown at you from there. So along with everyone who is the receiver of your light, I am so happy and proud of you. And in case our family isn't familiar with any of the particulars of your story, I want you to share your journey with alcohol addiction and how you continue to rise from it. I say continue to rise from it.
Thank you for that. And it is, and you're right, it is continue to rise, because it's an everyday enlightenment with that. So of course it is 23 years ago at, trying to do the math there now. I mean, I was, 23 years ago, I was at a crossroad. I was, fast life, fast lane, trying to just, they think that you're juggling all the balls at once. You know, at that point in time, I did not have any children at that point in time, but, I had a lot of yes people around me. I didn't have, it's the importance of having real good friends is really key. So 23 years ago, I just, like I said, I threw in the towel. My life became unmanageable. And that's the first step you've got to take as an alcoholic, when you accept that your life became unmanageable. And I was 21 years old. That's when people start drinking. And that's when I was checking out. I had had so many run-ins before. I had, like I said, I had, had run-ins with the police in the States, but again, it was drunken disorder. It was, thankfully only that. But again, it was, and I think also when we even spoke about this, and, I said also even losing my faith. Yeah, I mean, let's not take that. And even more after speaking, and I want to even come back to this that point later, but thank you for, you said, yes, I found my womanhood at the conference, but I've always had my faith. But having that conversation with you that evening, you brought the faith back into the forefront for me. And that's what I've moved forward with. And I lost my way. And I was a jock, I was a sports player, I was getting ready to, get ready. I was qualified for the Olympics 96, in sprinting, all of that. And it was just thinking that the life was never gonna end. And it was a accumulation of things. And I wanted to speak to the family now, because it's really key in terms of that. And I think to give it the most precedent as I can. We're all gonna face challenges. And we'll never be ashamed to ask for help, because that's what I ended up having to do. I was at an actual roadblock. And if I had not asked for help, JB, David, I wouldn't be having this conversation with you. I don't even want to think of what the options would have been, right? So never be afraid to ask for help, because we all are going to go through challenges. And also, never be so hard on yourself and other people, because you don't know what they're going through. People saw me as a child who, by all means, of had come from a very good family, first family of Kenya, you know, all of that stuff. But that still doesn't mean that it's enough. I still have my own challenges. I still had my own demons I had to face. So never judge a book by its cover, because you may be thinking that somebody next to you has everything, but the one thing that they don't have may be the most important piece of their life. Yeah, so monetary, family, no family, husband, no husband, partner, no partner, children, no partner. We are all just trying to get through life. And it took me getting into, not even the edge of the precipice, but into that precipice to get out with my alcoholism. And it is true. It is a journey ever since then. And it will always be a continuous journey. And I will always, I do offer mentorships. And like I was even telling you, you know, anytime, you know, you're doing anything or any, or with that, please, I'm happy to offer my services, or even to the family here, you know, JBH, if anyone's reaching out to you and they want more on how to help or how to stop or how to do it with addiction, please, I'm 100% there for that. But it's a real vicious cycle. And if you don't, and a lot of people don't get a grip of it. A lot of people who are still struggling. And again, to those people, I want to also say, it's okay. It's okay. Mm-hmm. And you will come through it. And it brings me back to the faith. You have to have that strong faith belief. And when I say that my higher power got me back on track, that is it. And it's not that I slipped ever since then, because I haven't. But again, going back to even where you come in, JBH, in terms of that, you brought my faith back into the forefront. And you can, again, work, family, kids, all these balls. Faith is as important, and it should not be sidelined for something else. So with that, yeah.
It's the evidence. Faith is the evidence. And you know, Nana, many of us speak at events and mentor and role model for the younger generation and have varying reasons why we do so. Some people who come from quote unquote privileged families don't always do a lot for other people in ways that require vulnerability. They may give money and they may be at the pleasant events, but the vulnerable side of it is a little off, you know, touch for them. You're not that person. You're open as a role model for women and girls. And we'll get to who your family is in a minute. But based on just that, speak about why you are so open. Giving you didn't have to be. And you give a lot with your struggles. The you in you. Is there one person who's impacted your life and thinking the most that made you do that? Or is it coming from a different place?
I think it's, you know, I'm the youngest of three children. So, you know, when you're, that's that joke, you know, the youngest child has always got to fight and has always got to be, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So I think I'm just more of a, I just like transparency. I've always just wanted that transparency. And I think the craving and wanting that transparency has also built a lot of my character. So again, that's why I think that, not I think, that is where that comes from. You know, as much as we also don't be afraid to celebrate yourself, because we don't do that as human beings. We will not. We will, someone will say, name 10 things that you don't like about yourself, and you can do it. When someone says, name 10 good things about yourself, it can be quiet for a long time. You know, so that's just human nature. But for me, it's the good, the bad, and the ugly. And, you know, it's authenticity. If I can, through my story, change one person's outcome in life, then I've done more than I could actually want to even do. So in terms of why do I tell my story? I tell my story because A, it helps me. You know, they say the day you forget how bad you got in your addiction is the day you could possibly relapse. It's not a guarantee, but there's a very good recollection of that. So repeatedly telling my story, subconsciously, keeping my journey through alcoholism in the forefront, and in the subconsciously in the mind, so I never forget how bad it got. But again, more so, so that's one aspect of it, of why I tell my story. And the other one is, as much as I can talk about some accolade that I've received, you know, as recent as the other day, I also was honored for my 25 years of hospitality globally. But even thank you. And even just talk about the bad that happened, because that has made me who I am today as well. It's the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I also don't ever want someone to look at me and think, you know, my life is great. No, my life is like your life. Yeah, we can do what the best we can make out of it. But I never want someone to feel like, you know, that person's never had a bad day in their life, because that's not real. That's not real. If you come across somebody and they say, I've never had to struggle, I've never had a bad day in my life, I've never, that's great. But I run from those people, because quite honestly, they still have their rose tinted glasses on, you know, and it's a danger for me to be around people who are not realists, you know? And for me, I go by that, 60-40 rule. If I can be happy 60% of the time, perfect. I'm not looking for 100%. There's gonna be days where I can have 30% happy, 20% happy, 80% happy, but my plateau is 60%, and that's good enough. You know, you can't have 100% of everything. So for me, it's sharing and sharing and sharing.
That's so beautiful. And, you know, it's so important right now, because we're in a position where the world is evolving, the world is changing, and we're all witnessing it in a very direct way. I mean, you and I are visiting 10 hours or 11 hours apart, you know, by device right now. We're going to shift one more time, though. We must talk about your family and learn about your childhood. Now, for those listening, I explain right now that Nana's grandfather, Jomo Kenyatta, was the first president of Kenya in 1964. And your uncle, Uhuru Kenyatta, was the most recent president of Kenya up until a few months ago. Nana, what was it like growing up in a family so politically involved? I mean, when people go places and they forget your name, you can just say, think of the country, that's my name.
No, of course. And it's... you know, one thing I have to really say, that in with family, we've actually been fortunate enough to be raised where, you know, it's so what? You know, my uncle or my mother or my father or my grandmother will tell you, so what if you're so and so? Who are you? You know, that was your grandfather. And that's, I'm not saying that was not fantastic, that was great, but don't focus so much on who you, and remember where you've come from. But you've also got to take the family name somewhere as well. You know, we don't want to be living in the history. Everyone can do their part. And it doesn't have to be as big as a presidency or anything like that. So on two sides, actually, I'll speak first of my mother's side. And yes, my mother, her father was Jomo Kenyatta, and he was the first president of Kenya. And of course, the founding father, the person who fought for independence and how Kenya got their independence from the British. So it's something special, you know, something to be proud about. Even if he wasn't my grandfather, you know, we should be extremely proud about that, you know. So there's that there. And then yes, later on, now more recently, my uncle, who is my mother's brother, just finished his two terms as presidency the last 10 years. So he handed over in August. So again, yes, he is my uncle. And growing up, Well, it was a bit, so if I'm talking about it on that side, so politically it's on my mother's side. On my father's side, I don't know. Have you been following The Crown, the series?
Yes.
And have you watched the most recent one? It's
I
beginning now.
haven't
I don't know.
seen the most recent one. I just completed last season.
Last season. So again, with that, the reason I'm just bringing that up is because, well, of course, you know Princess Diana and Mohammed Al-Fayed and Dowdy. So
Yes.
Mohammed Al-Fayed, who was the owner of Harrods before he sold it to the Qataris, but the famous name Mohammed Al-Fayed, he started off actually business. He started at the same time with my father, with a gentleman called Tiny Rowland. So on the other side, on my father's side, you've got the business side of
I
it
knew
as well as
that,
well.
Nana. I knew that. Yeah, that's really important. And I think our family need to hear a little bit more about that. That's really important.
So with on that side, it was, you know, so with my father, he started off with Tiny Rowland, and Tiny Rowland was a British gentleman who came into Africa and basically went to each of the different countries and found key people in those countries to be able to set up his companies. So in Kenya, it was my father. In Egypt, it was Mohammed Al-Fayed and his brother Ali. So at that point in time, there's a book called Rebel Tycoon that is all about Tiny Rowland and his conquering of the Dark Continent back in the 70s. But again, my father in his 20s was, you know, one of the young up-and-coming people who actually shaped the business of what we actually see today in Kenya. So that was on my father's side. So going back to that question of, you know, as of how, what was it like growing up? It was kind of like from both sides. And then again, on top of that, if you were to now bring my grandmother on my father's side, she was the first female member of parliament in Kenya. She was appointed in the first government. She was also the founding member of Women Mandela, which is basically the women's movement, a women's guild, so to speak, the biggest one here in Kenya. She was the founding of that. And then again, you know, so growing up, it was kind of like you're in it. I mean, from the day I was born, my grandfather was president at the time. He passed away in 78 in August, and I was born in March. So again, he was able to attend my birth. And again, by virtue of my relationship to him, or who I was to him, I was the front page of the paper. And I guess ever since that, 45 years on, it's been like that. So you know, it's kind of like when you say you've really lived it, it's really been from the day you've been born until right now, you're under a microscope. I mean, you're to the people. People know you. People know your name, or know, or think they know you before that. But again, I'm extremely proud of my family. I will never, never, ever say I will never not happy being part of my family. We are the most close-knit type of family that you will come against. And I think it's because of that, just because that's all that we've known, you know. So again, your private life is really private. That's why, again, there's not too much on us on our private side, but it's the public side if you decide to go like that, you know. So growing up has been bittersweet in terms of, you know, it what comes with that family name in terms of expectations. So again, people, you know, if it's asking you for jobs, and then when you honestly say that you can't, they're then like, you know, oh fine, you just don't want to help. So you've got that as well. And again, you've got the real good parts of it, you know, where you're able to use your networks for good. You know, I've been able to do that, and that's something that I really love. And you know, my whole CSR and that side of it, I do very privately, but I really do a big space of that. And we all do a huge big space of that in each individual way. It's not just me and the family. I mean, you know, everyone has their own part that they do. But again, it's been, there's nothing else I know of it, you know. Growing up, of course, I went to boarding school. So again, at age 7, I left Kenya and I went to boarding school in England. My father was very big on opportunity. And of course, it's a normal culture in Africa where you say, mainly at that point in time, if you think of it in the 80s, early 80s, it was kind of unheard of for girls to be kind of given that forefront. You know, it's an African culture. It's the boys are first, you know. you know, in Nasa culture, if you've got enough money for this here, we will educate the boy, even though the girl is more promising. It's just that culture. So my father and our family as a whole, and other, it's not only our family, but there's a couple of other families as well, my best friend and with that, who've been able to experience where their family have been able to say, well, you know what, based, if you get the grades, you will go to wherever you need to go to. It's not just because it's only the boys here. Everybody is on their own merit. So at age 7, I went off to boarding school in England. And again, at age 7, it's you know, and it's an international school. So again, the first night when you're there, you're all in the dormitory with another 10 young girls with you. And it's a crying fest, you know, because you're just kind of like cut off from your family. And by the time half term comes around or end of term, when you're going back to your family, you're crying again because you don't want to leave your friends that you've made, you know. After that, I was fortunate enough to go to high school in Massachusetts. Again, at a very prestigious school there, at a place called Cushing Academy. Again, the boarding school in Massachusetts, and again, really good with that. So I'm an international, you know, person. So again, my family have been able to give me the exposure internationally, which I think is key, because the more you learn about different cultures, the more you can take back and appreciate what you have at home, and also appreciate what other cultures have as well, and maybe take on that some of their culture and make it your own. So growing up was, I have to say, and I also did get into trouble. Yeah, let's not even joke about that. There've been many times when, you know, I had to really, you know, my father would come over to high school and be getting like terrific, horrific grades, and he'd be so upset and he'd like fly back or whatever. So it's been an all-rounder, you know. There's been heartache, you know, just because I'm from a privileged family. I've experienced real heartache, you know, and again, with that, it is front page, you know. Again,
talk about that. Help somebody.
Yeah, and with that as well, you know, it's been, I'm a single parent by choice, right? It got to a point where my partner, it's common knowledge, was had a wandering eye, and with that, but again, in those moments when you're really hoping, you're trying to deal with it yourself, but again, it's in the media, it's there, you know, once again, so-and-so is cheating on so-and-so, it's not nice, you don't, you know, so again, it's like I said, it's the good, the bad, and the ugly. When I do something well, it also is a media story. When something bad happens to me, the country have experienced my heartache. You know, there's one point in time, I'll send you the clip of that on the newspaper cutting where, you know, again, I don't know why it's front page news, but they were like, you know, let's find Nana a husband, a good husband. I mean, really, does it need to be? Right, that's not breaking news, but you know, it's funny, but it's not funny at the same time. You know, when you're just kind of like, you know, have different churches inviting me to their church, and they're like, come to our church and you'll find a good, wholesome man, you know, not the bad boy type. So
it's again, Nana, it's your relatability, because let's be very clear. You are the first family of a country. And yeah, what you're doing openly, many don't do, regardless of where they are. And you yeah are sharing honestly about your experiences. That makes you very relatable to people. So it may not feel like front page news for you, but it's also, oh, and that's happening in our lives too. And so when you bring solutions, when you bring forward innovations and thoughts around how to change the way Kenya relates to the world, it's respected. And I love that. And I've come to know that about you and respect it a lot. And, you know, Nana, you are a woman, although young, who has been educated and lived internationally. What do you think your message is for those who continue to see Africa as the dark continent? I referenced it early on. You referred to it as part of someone's book, someone's text, you know. What is your message about that? We are, you mentioned that you know, the connectivity that Kenya has is excellent. I have to say that whether I'm in my Carolina home, Vegas home, or California home, or even in my English home, connectivity is an issue. And you're saying, nope, I can connect. I just got to get there, but I can connect. Exactly. You know,
yeah.
So I really want you to talk about that. You know, you have an international perspective. You lived internationally. As I said, you've been educated internationally. How do you help people open their eyes to what they think of as the dark continent?
And exactly. I mean, it is, you know, we refer to ourselves as the dark continent, but I would actually like even say we're the untapped continent, because many things come back. I mean, we were the dark continent, and it's a play on words and everything like that. But now in regards to Africa and more so Kenya, where's a space that I can speak in, I like to say we're the continent that is now untapped. Mm-hmm. It's the last frontier, so to speak, you know. And when I say untapped, there's a lot of resources and possibilities in this continent, and especially in Kenya. You know, if you even look at different things, most probably when you are in the grocery store, or if you're at home and you've got a plate of vegetables, the baby corn or the green beans are from Kenya. Mm-hmm. 80% mm-hmm. of the world's population of produce is produced in Kenya, you know? So again, that's the untappedness, that's the connection there. Again, you want to, you know, the biggest holiday for flowers is Valentine's Day. And as much as, you know, they speak about Holland and the flower show, Kenya with our roses is 90% contributor of flowers for Valentine's Day. That's huge. And when I say that's only one day, so you can imagine we are not only producing for that one day or that one week. So I'm just giving you that percentage. 90% is coming for that Valentine's Day or that week. So imagine production does not stop before or after that. So just along those lines as well, in the supermarket, your beautiful big head of roses is most likely from Kenya. Again with that. And then when you now want to go and Starbucks is everywhere. You want to pick up your coffee, you know, again, 70 to 80% of that is Kenyan coffee. You either see Kenya or you see Ethiopia, but again, it's Kenya. And again, when you talk about the tea, we've got a lot of tea drinkers in the world. That's also Kenya, you know. And now when we move across to, exactly, there we go. And we are actually Kenyan tea. And our current president right now, when he came in, he actually said, the fact that we are 90% Kenyan tea is 90% used to blend other teas. Why has Kenya never come up with their own Kenya tea? So he's given a directive and said, within the next year, Kenya can be blending and producing teas for blending. But if we're doing that for 90% of the tea drinkers in the world, why are we not coming up with our own product and our own brand of Kenyan tea? Because it's being used 90% of the space. Clearly, there's a taste for it. So again, with that, and now when you even go into the whole tech space, tech innovation is huge. In terms of even with streaming, in terms of all of that, we're all there being able to do that. So again, that's something that is very, very key that we're able to even do and use outward. So again, that's a very big big thing as well. So tech, IT, like I said before, the mobile money banking platform, high connectivity at a very low rate. Again, people don't realize the standard of living in Kenya is actually extremely high. So for instance, if you do see a duty on a vehicle, on a car, we pay duty for a car to come in. So if, for instance, it was a BMW, so to speak, lack of a better word or whatever, but use of a vehicle, any vehicle that you see on the road in Kenya is actually one and two thirds the cost. So you purchase the car, and two thirds more would be the duty on it. That's how high our duties. So that's just in terms of cost of living and everything like that. So Kenya is a real, and in terms of real estate as well, it's per square footage, it's also pretty, it's competitive with that. Mm-hmm. But standard of living is another thing as well. A lot of people are making Kenya their second home. A lot of international people are making their second home. And I don't want to say you have to have a budget of millions of dollars. No, the standard of living here in terms of having staff, in terms of having an acre of land, ETC like that, can start off as somewhere, even of course with loans and everything like that, but even somewhere in terms of even $100,000. You can do $100,000. And
US dollars.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And of course, when you do that, you can, and that would be the equivalent of having a lifestyle of maybe $1 million in outside.
The home,
the lifestyle, the staff, everything like that. But again, you've got the beautiful views, you've got the savannah, you've got everything. So yeah.
And you're providing employment and
and a constant. Another thing as well, sorry JB, I forgot to tell you, a lot of the companies are using Kenya as a production, as a free zone. So mm-hmm. Burberry, a lot of the designers, a lot of the clothing companies all have EPZ factories here. So they're all being made here, and of course then they go out because it's a free zone, so they're being produced in Kenya. That is a huge thing as well. And again, what we're doing now with this government and even with the old government as well, with the previous government, is some of the clothing does stay behind in the country for us to be able to purchase as Kenyans. But a large part of it gets exported out, of course, so. But Kenya is a manufacturing textile.
I'm so glad. So glad you mentioned that, because our demographic is of an age where they really care about that as well. And I will share with you that while I'm excited about that and see that growing a lot, I'm also excited to get my clothing from you, my African clothing. You know, yes. I'm running out of those few pieces I have, so I need some more.
Yes.
Hey, you know, Nana, you mentioned that you are a single parent by decision. You're a mother of three beautiful boys and a huge soccer fan. The USA and England just won matches in the World Cup that help us to advance toward the finish line. You've lived in each of these countries. Did you have a team? Were you pulling for them?
USA for me, and England? Yeah, I mean, even for either one, you know, for me, the thing I love about the World Cup is that, yes, we all morph back into where our, you know, no one's saying loyalties, but our country allegiance goes to, you know. And again, it's that thing of, I love the World Cup because it's like, yes, you know, like you're saying, America and England, you know, I'm like, yeah, I went to school in both. And then when the next one goes through, I'm like, okay, I'm with you. Then afterwards, it's like France. I went to holiday in France, so let's support you. You know, Brazil, this is where I'd want to kind of go to. But the spirit of, there's something about the World Cup that just, even if you're not a football fan, you just get drawn to watch it. You know, it's probably the most best time to get into a sporting soccer is through the World Cup. Because it's not really about, you know, there's a football every year with the Premier League and, you know, Manchester and City and Chelsea and all of that. But the World Cup takes it to another level. So for me, it's more of just really enjoying and just watching the match, you know.
Do you play soccer with your boys? I do.
And I used to play soccer in high school in Massachusetts. Right. So again, even with that, but again, with my boys, they do that. So I'm more of like, and I keep telling them, like, you know, I was an athlete, I was this, I was that. And they just look at me like, okay, fine. But we do kick the ball outside. And even now it's a lot easier during this World Cup time. Yeah.
Well, you know, you mentioned and you played in the U.S. as well in high school. So you were schooled in private, and we can understand that with where your family is. Did I read somewhere that you chose homeschooling for your boys?
During the pandemic, I did. During the pandemic.
And how did that go? How did that go? You've seen homeschooling, like so many, and you've seen, you know, a classroom. How do they compare for you?
I think just given the time of why we did the homeschooling, I mean, the boys are now back in school. So they're back in mainstream school. And even before the pandemic, they were there. But during the pandemic, it was really the homeschooling. Two very different, very, very, very different avenues, I have to say. You know, homeschooling is kind of like, even for them, they were getting a bit cabin feverish, right? It's a lot of, and a lot more tech, a lot more gadgets. I noticed books translated into gadgets. And the pandemic has done that for us, you know, even for the kids. You know, so really trying to now get back into them doing books, reading their books, doing all of that kind of stuff. But each one has its own special kind of pros and cons, I'd like to call it. You know, with the homeschooling, we got to get a lot more things done. So they were able to do a cover a lot more with that, because of course it's a one-on-one. Whereas if you're in a class, obviously you're there in a group and you've got to kind of get on with it and build together as a class, you know, for that. And then also with the homeschooling, I think it really made me appreciate the school system, to be very honest. You know, to be extremely honest, it was a lovely time. But when it was time for them to go back, believe me, we were waking up really early on that day. We were the first ones at school. Get out of the car. You know?
The first. You're exactly the first back. None of that's funny. None of that is so funny. And it's so true.
I love my voice, but like I said, it was time. Yeah, we needed to just, yeah. It was time to go back.
Two more questions for you before we go four, okay? And the first of the last two are, Nana, do you believe women are still afraid to assert their power? And if so, why?
I think that they are, it's common nature. We've been trained to take a back seat. We've been trained to not be in the forefront. You understand? We've been trained to do all of these type of things. So we just are also trained not to, it's kind of like it's expected of us. It's not like a big accolade.
Are you suggesting that a mother's love is supportive and a father's love is guiding, and we fall into those roles thinking we are better women when we stand behind and support? Is that what you're saying? You're on mute.
Sorry, yeah, okay. No, it fell on me. Sorry, yeah. So actually with that, I would say, I think it's two very different, and I don't want to get into that. You know, like when you say like a mother's role is nurturing and a father's is, you know, tough love type of thing, you know, you've been able to see that a lot with that. So again, it's kind of like, it's very different. And the fact that I've had to play both, isn't it? I mean, as a single parent, you know, so it's a time when you are trying to be nurturing, but it's very different. And I think for me, I've also had to take the stance of tough love as well, you know, in terms of that. So I think it's really based on character, because you can get, and again, with women and their love or their nurturing, I wouldn't say so much so it's taking a back seat. I think it's literally really just, I'll speak for myself. I think it's the best way to do that in terms of answering this question. I've had to be the mother and I've had to be the father, you know. I want to also make it very clear. It's my father of my children is not deceased. He is alive, right? So it's not that thing where I've been left widowed or anything like that. But it is what it is, you know, and it's never going to be an outcome for my children. You know, we get on and we're able to do it. So in terms of nurture versus nature, isn't it? I guess it kind of comes to that. Nurture versus nature. It really depends on the situation, you know.
Well, you know, the way I look at it is that it doesn't have to be one of the other two things.
Exactly. They both come together. You need both. It just depends on the situation that your child may be going through. Yeah.
Well, here's the last question before we go to 444. Mm-hmm. What's your biggest holiday wish For this season. You know, you like me see this as a holiday and a holy season, a holiday yeah. season and a holy season. What is your biggest wish?
For my country, I mentioned earlier, we are going through drought right now. It's real. It's not preventative. We are actually deep in it, the northern part of Kenya. And, you know, as much as everybody is a time of rejoicing and feasting, in Kenya, where there's a large percentage of people who are going to really have a difficult and have had a difficult time. So my wish for the country, and of course, we've also come through a new transition in government, you know? So when I say peace, it's peace and unity for our country. The transition has been extremely smooth. There's been no fighting. It's been very, very well transitioned, and that we have to, you know, applaud our exiting president and our incoming president and everybody around that. So fantastic for that. But my wish for the country is peace, continued peace, let's say, and a breakthrough. We pray for the rain because, of course, with rain comes new life. Comes new vegetation, comes your bread basket. So for my country, that is my wish there. For my family, it is continued health. I believe without health, there's really nothing else you can move forward with. You cannot have the biggest company. You cannot have
And that includes mental health.
And that's been a major one in the last 2 years, right? Is
and
that
spiritual
and again,
health. And spiritual exactly. health. Bishop
exactly.
Bishop teaches us how those work together.
Exactly. And exactly. And lastly, I would say, and again, it's with faith, you know, it is really using this holy time to, when I say reset, it is not resetting yourself as we normally say, we're going to do a reset and we've got New Year's resolutions and all of that. Let us use this holy month and our New Year resolution more with a faith base. With a faith base, I'd like to say it like that.
I love that. Faith is a relationship with God. Religion is a yeah. search for God. I love that exactly. you're calling it faith. Let's do four for four. Okay, so Nana, I'm going to ask you four questions to which you will give me four answers. And the first question is, you get to invite to dinner anyone alive or deceased. Who are the four people who are seated at your table and why?
One would be my grandfather, because even though it was 3 months when I was alive.
You have two grandfathers, which one?
Sorry. My Jomo Kenyatta, the former first president of Kenya, because again, he passed away 3 months after I was born. So, and the reason for that is not as my grandfather, but as the founding father of the nation, to hear the struggles that he went through. So we will never forget and know what it means to become an independent country. That would be number one.
He built a country. He built
exactly.
a country.
Exactly. Number two, I would say, gosh, who would I invite? I would like to say probably even Bishop T.D. Jakes. I would invite for that meal. I would invite for that meal because what this year has meant in terms of the different interactions I've had with him. And each time there's always been an enlightening moment. So, and not only faith-based, but just in terms of across the board, entrepreneurship, everything like that. So I would say that. I would also invite my grandmother on my father's side, who again, I was very young when I didn't get to meet her. So again, she died in 1980. So of course I didn't get to meet her, but I don't remember anything in terms of nuggets. This is all gathering nuggets together. For her. And the fourth person, Nelson Mandela.
Yes. Yes.
London.
With gratitude, yes.
Exactly. With gratitude, yeah.
Thank you. And I will come and help serve that dinner so that
yes,
I can
you're already in the house. It's our dinner.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so Nana, we're going 2 for 4. What 4 things are you listening to right now in music and why that you want to share with our family?
Marvin Gaye is one of them, is on my playlist.
Wait a minute, Nana. Now you can go over here with sexual healing. You can go over here with what's going on. You can go to the party and let jam. What are you listening to by Marvin?
The tune itself is with Marvin Gaye's Let's Get It On. That one is a feel-good factor with that one. Another one is Garth Brooks' Unanswered Prayers.
That one
I really, really, if you haven't heard that, get that. It puts everything into perspective.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. God is tight. God is tight.
Yeah. And then number 3 would be Yarbrough and the People, Don't Stop the Music.
Yeah. Yarbrough. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yep, so that one there would be number 3. And number 4, gosh, would probably be, I'm trying to even think. Oh, actually, Snoop Dogg, Gin and Juice.
There's
so
okay.
much in the LBC. That one.
Yeah, that's great. And I'm going to recommend that you listen to anything by Chevelle Franklin. She was just on the podcast. And I don't know if you've been listening to her, but go pull it. You have because you heard her at ILS as well. She's just been killing it. She's been killing it. Yeah. But I love your 4, girl. Okay. So look, I don't have anything to add. I just have something to pull out. yours. What 4 books do you recommend to our family that they read and why?
Okay. One book that really I read a long time ago, and it's Princess. And that book is a real life documentary, but it's Princess, and it's about the Saudi royal family. A book written very long time ago. I'll find out who the author was of that, but it's Prince. I'll share that with you. But that really was an eye opener. It's everything. When you talk about, you know, relatable, non-relatable, outrageous, whatever, it's a real like that. So that would be one for that there. Another book that really, really got me, I would have to say is, I forget the name of it. But the storyline of that was about a younger boy who obviously has grown up and is telling a story, but how horrifically, unfortunately, you know, he was sexually abused by a member of his family. But then by doing that, he was able to overcome. You know, don't let one of your shortcomings cripple you. That was the message in that story. So I'll get the name of, I've got it up there, I've got the name of that book. So with that there, another book that I've just actually started is, it's Gabrielle Union's book, her book, Wine, the wine one, I forget, sorry, I'll give you the one of that. And I've actually gotten into audio. So I've gone way back now with Bishop T.D. Jakes, and I'm just restarting all of those.
Gabrielle has several books. Welcome to the Party, We're Going to Need More, and You Got It.
That one, we're gonna need More Wine, that one.
Okay.
We're gonna need more, that's the one for Gabrielle. And then also with Bishops, like again with that, I on audio, what I like to actually do is not really books, but it's like a podcast. And there's one as well that I really like to share with you is when he was in Kenya. That actually has been really, it's been one of his biggest ones that he's turned. And more recently, even today, I opened up and I was listening to the one of the story, the the thematic of his message was, because again, I'm in a transition period, aren't I? I'm kind of like leaving one job and going to something else. And it's about,
yes.
Don't be worried about taking the next step, because God will find you and give you your next mission, your next journey. So I'll actually send that to you on WhatsApp after this, to be able to see it. But that's actually how I started my day today. And it just actually popped up. So it was very timely, let's say. Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. And now we're going 4 for 4. Okay, Nana, you've given so much in this conversation. Put in a capsule 4 pieces of advice you give this family. If that advice was shared to you by someone else, pay homage and tell us who they are and tell us why this advice you think is so important. These 4 pieces.
Number one, I would like to, first and foremost, you know, they say everything happens for a reason, right? And meeting you, JBH, has really been game-changing. And it's game-changing, and I actually want to say soul-changing. I don't even want to say game-changing, because game-changing is like powerhouse, all that. And it's deeper than that. It's soul-changing. You're right. When I came to Atlanta, I didn't know what to expect. You know, it's. I was in a cocoon and I left as a butterfly. You're right, I womaned out. But my most impactful, and as much as, yes, with the woman thou art loosed and everything like that, you yourself, JBH, I don't know if you even realize it. I don't know if... it even is in your forefront, or if it's something like that, but you are one of the most amazing, beautiful souls and human beings I have ever met. When I was speaking with you, when we were upstairs, you know, in the little room with Chrissy and your team, it was. I can't even describe it. It was soul changing. You made me realize, make no apology for who I am. Yeah, that's what you taught me. You taught me, as much as you have time for everything else, make time for your faith. Right? And just, I mean, you're a powerhouse, JBH, right? You're a powerhouse, and you didn't have to do what you did. You understand. You didn't have to take the time out. You didn't have to do whatever, but you did. And for that, I am forever grateful. And I just, if I can leave it like that, you said for a capsule. Relating to that capsule, I'm not going to add anybody else or any other lesson to that. The lesson that I will add to that capsule is, without even knowing it, we will change somebody's life. And that's what you have done. And thank you.
Thank you, Nana. From my heart to your home, I thank you.